everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 230. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 6, Episode 18, Entropy, and Angel, Season 3, Episode 18, Double or Nothing. As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable, find us on this post on typable.com, or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen, and I'm joined by fellow superfan Caitlin. We're never on the same episode together.
This is exciting.
And newbies Mitch and Kristen. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
So I'm going to kick off the fun facts because you guys could probably already hear it in my voice. I've been sick for like 2 weeks. I'm really like ready to be done with this thing. And Kristen, I think it's going away. Like, I feel so much better right now. My sore throat isn't sore. And I didn't sleep for 2 days because it hurt so bad. I kept waking up in tears because the pain was so intense. So fun fact, next time you hear me. Yeah, hopefully. My fun fact is that next time you hear me, hopefully I will sound like a normal human being again.
Yay.
Yeah.
I don't like hearing that you get sick all the time because it's always like con crud or something else. But you're.
I know. The thing is, I don't get sick that often. But when I get sick, it's really intense. And it's usually only when I go to like the city and on the subway or a convention because people are gross.
Oh, yeah. But, totally.
Yeah. All right, Mitch, what do you have for us this week?
Gosh, I haven't been on in like a month, so it was hard to pick one, but I decided to go with something kind of unique. In the little downtown that I live in here in Denver, there was an Italian fest, and I got to eat authentic Italian pizza and desserts, and it was all fabulous, and it felt like I was in the middle of a Gilmore Girls episode. I felt like I was all decorated, and they had music going, and little booths set up everywhere. It was like the most magical thing.
Did you eat gelato?
I did. I had like this berry gelato with actually seeds in it. And it was just so tasty. Ooh.
Gelato is not just fancy ice cream. It has a different churn rate. I don't know. Kristen and I just watched Logan Lucky and...
The little girl's telling her dad about the difference. She's like, I want to go into the culinary arts. I've been watching a lot of Top Chef. And like, she knows the difference and it was really cute.
Oh my God, that movie is so weird.
It was.
Gelato is so different from soft serve. Yeah. I like them both for very different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Anything ice creamy is delicious.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
What about you, Kristen? Did I just steal your thunder?
Oh, no.
Okay, good.
My fun fact is that the Lions are officially 1-0.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Starting the season off right. The first quarter was a disaster. We were a hot mess. But thank God our defense stuck it out and kept us in the game, and then we rocked the fourth quarter like we normally do. So, yeah, we started the season out right. Let's just see if we can keep it going. Go Lions. All right. Yeah, that's my fun fact. It was a good game.
And what about you, Caitlin?
Well, my fun fact is not that the Falcons are 1-0, even though they are. my fun fact is that I am bracing for Irma here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Atlanta is under a tropical storm warning, which is the first time that has ever happened here.
Ooh. Ooh. A lot of people from Florida were going to Georgia to stay safe.
Yeah.
And Irma followed them. We usually get like bits, like remnants of hurricanes that are in the Gulf and everything. Like we'll get the like whatever is left over, but it's never been this strong this far inland. So, I teach at two schools. They're both closed tomorrow, and they're going to make decisions about Tuesday. But it's supposed to come in late tonight and be just ridiculous rain and storms during the day tomorrow and then kind of peter out Tuesday morning. So I've stocked up on food, and I'm just hoping the power doesn't go out.
Well, good luck there. We also have some friends in Florida and all of that. One of the staff members, Brandy, lives there, and I'm worried about people, but it'll be okay. Some people are evacuating. Some people are hunkering down, and they've been through this before, so they know what to do, and hopefully luck is on their side.
Yeah.
We're used to heavy thunderstorms, but we have a lot mm-hmm. of trees. So our issue is that trees will fall and cause power yep. outages. So,
yep.
and hurricanes can cause tornadoes. So mm-hmm. we're a little about tornadoes coming through, but mostly it's stuff we're used to in Atlanta with bad thunderstorms.
Yeah. Well, hope everything is going to be okay and no trees fall down around you. That would be preferable.
Yes, please.
But let's talk about some vampires now. We're going to start off with Buffy, of course, episode 618, Entropy. In this episode, Anya is a vengeance demon who can't exact her own vengeance, so she tries to convince her friends to make a wish on her behalf. In the end, she ends up having some spicy rebound sex with Spike, and when these two demonic gems get caught in the act, Xander starts acting real judgy for a guy who once tried to have sex with an insect. Callback. Meanwhile, Willow and Tara are kind of back together. Sorry. And I don't want to get sucked into how cute they are and forget how toxic they used to be. Oh, that was real good. I needed that laugh.
Also a mummy.
Oh, that's true. That is true.
So Xander has zero room to talk.
Mm-hmm. But let's kick this off with the trio, and specifically with Jonathan, because Jonathan is a little worried that the other two don't trust him or aren't letting him in on their plans. And the other two, we see in an aside, kind of don't trust him either. And there's a little tension going on here. And Ariana wrote in the doc, good, defect, Jonathan, you are better than this. And I just want to know how you guys feel about this. Are you hoping that Jonathan will switch sides? Do you think that the trio will come back together? How do you think this is going to play out?
Getting used to the fact that Jonathan's around and, like, he actually matters. I still don't feel like he's going to even, like, if anything, like, I really don't feel like he's going to stay past this season for the fact that his friends wanted to kill him here. And if anything, then he'll probably go to the good guys, but die in the final battle. I don't know who the final battle is really against, because I don't really think the trio is going to be it. They don't seem like they're formidable enough, but we're getting close. So you have to have a big bad somewhere, right? Is that it? Is this really it?
Yeah, I never really understood why exactly Jonathan was all up with these two. Like, it doesn't really make sense. And so, yeah, I want him to just kind of ditch them. And I don't know if he necessarily needs to switch sides, but he needs to quit acting like a punk. So that's about all I got.
How do you feel about Jonathan at this point, Caitlin?
I'm nervous for him because we've seen Warren has definitely taken a shift since Katrina died, and his the things he's willing to do, and the fact that he and Andrew are talking about, you know, it'll be soon, like, and not really needing Jonathan after this, I don't think that bodes well for poor Jonathan.
Yeah, and I almost wrote down that line about the dead ex-girlfriend is my favorite line, except for it's like really awful, so I felt guilty doing it, but like, right, Warren has taken a turn, and Jonathan's always really walked that line. And let's be fair, like, they're all spying on the Scoobies. They're all being really hard, trying to do whatever to Buffy pretty much every episode they're in. So, like, they suck, but Warren obviously sucks the most. And Jonathan, I don't know, I still feel something for him. I'm still empathetic toward him. And even though he's not a good guy right now, I still kind of hold out hope that maybe that will change, but we're just going to have to see. So Anya comes back, and she and Xander do meet up, and Xander apologizes, but he still doesn't want to marry her. He wants to be with her. He loves her. He knows he made a mistake, but he doesn't want to marry her. And rightfully so, this really hurts Anya, because I think if he said, you know, I made a mistake, like, yes, I would definitely want to do this, I think she would heavily consider it. And I think that there's a good possibility it would happen. But she's so angry with him right now. And I kind of want to see how you guys feel about this, because the fact that Xander came back and admitted he did something wrong, he apologized to Anya, and he told her he still loves her and he wants to work through this, is very mature, because he could have just gone off into hiding. He could have tried to get over it, but he's admitting to what he did wrong, except he's not really going about it the right way, and he's still hurting her. So you guys fully come down on Anya's side? Do you have any sympathy for Xander?
No.
I was gonna say, I feel like I'm the only one who ever has sympathy for Xander. Like, he's a human being, and he screwed up, and he knows it, and he still loves her, and it's not like that was never the issue. It was just that he got cold feet that day and couldn't do it and saw everything around him, and, you know, seeing his family at the wedding and understanding where he's coming from, like, he screwed up. He gets it. And so, you know, I can't help but feel a little bad for him, because he knows that it's going to take a lot to get her back. Like, it's going to take a lot to prove that he's trustworthy enough to be worthy of her time again. And, you know, he's Xander. He wants the easy fix. So he's going to step in and apologize and tell her he wants to be with her again. But she's also Anya, and she's not just going to be like, oh, yeah, okay, that's fine, let's be together. Like, no, she's going to make him work for it. So I feel bad for him. I also feel bad for her, because does she deserve any of this? No. But it's just life, you know, and stuff happens, and you make bad decisions, and now he's got to live with it and figure out, you know, how they're both going to go on from here.
I think he has no room to be anything but horrible here, because I love what Ariana wrote, that he asked her to marry him, and then she said, hold up, make sure you're 100% sure. And then he was like, don't be stupid, I'm 100% sure. And yes, then he does pull this crap. He does all this to her. She is so much better than him. She always has been, in my opinion. And even when she was like a vengeance demon, I feel like she was better than him. She had like more help out people or something, but he's gone back to a place that I really don't appreciate. I thought I was starting to maybe appreciate his character, but I'm not. I'm not at all. Him and Willow are very tough for me to watch right now. Willow still, like, I'm still not over everything she is and does, because she's, I feel like she would probably want to react in the same way here. And I'm sure we could even go into a discussion with how she's reacting with Tara and how she wants to get her back. It feels like they're in a pretty similar mindset.
Yeah, we will definitely get to Willow soon. But Caitlin, I kind of want to hear your take on Xander.
So Xander's the worst. And this episode is basically him being even worse than he's ever been. The first part of the episode where he has that initial conversation with Anya, I don't find horrible. Though I disagree with Kristen in saying that he got cold feet in that moment, because a big part of that argument is that he implies that he's had that issue for a while. Anya gets really mad at that, because he says, I could have said something sooner. And she's like, excuse me? So he'd been having those doubts for a while and had not been voicing them, which is really immature, considering they're about to make a lifelong declaration. So I think that this conversation could have gone a lot better if he had started with, when she says, do you want to get married? If he said, yes, eventually, just like immediately. But he just kept distancing himself and then kind of backtracking to be like, but I want to be with you. But it's complicated. But blah, blah, blah. Like, he isn't being direct enough about it. And that seems to show hesitation on his part toward Anya and their relationship. And I think that's a big part of why Anya is even more hurt after that conversation, because Xander had the opportunity to mend fences a bit and he just made it even worse.
I think I fall somewhere between you and Kristen, because I do feel a little sympathy for Xander, just because, like, he's not evil. He's human. He made a huge mistake. He regrets it. He knows that. And I think, despite the fact that he does kind of suck right now, he's being honest. And that's not something he was doing before. He is trying not to make the same mistake twice. Should he have told Anya way before, literally at the altar, to, you know, should he have told her what was going on? Yes, this is somebody you want to spend the rest of your life with. You should be able to share everything with them. including those doubts, I think if they had sat down, you know, this conversation would have been rough, but I think they would have gotten through it and they would have figured out what the real problem was. If they had to have, you know, postpone the wedding, then so be it. I think Anya would have been able to live with that. But this is just awful for her to go through because there's nothing she can really do about it. And she loves him so much and she knows that he loves her so much, but he still doesn't want to get married. So good for him for owning up to it. Good for him for being honest now, but that doesn't make the situation any less sucky.
I hope they never get back together. I don't want this. I want that Taylor Swift song to be this. Never ever getting back together, for real. He needs to admit to not owning up to this earlier too. I think that's half the issue here, that he's just like, oh, I could have said it sooner. And that's only half an apology there. That's just, that it should have been like, I'm sorry for trying to take your hand in the middle of an apocalypse. I should have thought about it more. I thought you were going to die, as opposed to, oops, I made a mistake, whatever. Like, he's being kind of just like, but we can get past this. And she's like, no. And I don't blame her. She had to go through a lot of embarrassment that day. It was basically her that needed to be given to get married, and he's the one that flips the dime here. So it's disturbing and it's sad, because I feel like the show wants us to see them get back together eventually, especially from the fact that she stops the last wish in this episode right when a wish is about to be against Xander finally. It's like, okay, I get it. She's still pining after him, but I wish she, this is my own wish. I wish Anya had the strength to move on from this horrible slime.
What do you think of Helfrich's advice? Because Ariana wrote in here, Helfrich is an A+ BFF with the real talk. And I hate her. I hate everything about her. And I think she's super selfish. And I think she does give Anya some real talk, but I don't necessarily think from like a genuine place. I think she's still a little spiteful over a lot of their history.
Yeah. I don't know if my hatred of Helfrich comes from her being that really annoying, happy resident on Grey's Anatomy, or because she's like this peppy, ridiculous person on Grey's and it makes me crazy. And
I could see that. She does that really well.
Yeah. As soon as I saw her on screen, like the first time Helfrich showed up, I was like, oh my God, like it's her. So I don't know. I don't like her. Like every time she shows up, I feel like she gives Anya bad advice. Yes, Anya needs a girlfriend. And let's face it, Willow and Buffy and Dawn are not going to give Anya what she needs. So yeah, for a little like Xander bashing, you know, little girlfriend time, fine. Like I can understand why Helfrich's there, but I don't think she gives her the best advice. She wants Anya to be a vengeance demon. She doesn't want her to accept this whole human life thing. So, you know, I don't feel like she's necessarily the go-to person, you know, for great advice, but if Anya needs someone to vent to, she's a totally fine option. Like, that I totally get. So, you know, she's not my favorite.
Does anyone like Helfrich?
Yes,
Mitch,
I love her.
You do? I'm not surprised.
But on top of that, did William and or Spike not recognize her, minus the demon face? Because he seemed to be just like, oh, hey, ladies. And she didn't bring up anything of their association again. I was looking forward to more of that. He walks in. Unfortunately, it didn't work out.
What about you, Caitlin?
I don't hate Helfrich. I think she is what she is, but I don't think she's very... What she is as a vengeance demon is not what Anya needs right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as we see later with Spike, what Anya needs is empathy. And that's what she's not getting. She doesn't need to be encouraged to like be more hateful and angry. So I don't think she can give Anya what she needs, and because she's been a demon for so long, like she is incapable of understanding what Anya needs. So I think her intentions are good, but if we're thinking about Anya's mental health, that's not what she needs right now.
Right. The advice that Helfrich does give her is get other people to make this wish for you. So Anya goes to all the girls and tries to get them to make a wish, to wish pain and misfortune on Xander. And none of them will. All of them, you know, are mad at Xander for what he did. They don't agree with what he did. They do feel sympathetic toward Anya, but at the same time, like, he's still their friend and he's hurting too. And I like the way that none of them kind of condone what he did, but at the same time, none of them, you know, hate him for it. Like, they're trying to be there for him too. And the whole thing is just a big mess. And I think everybody was pretty mature about the situation.
Props to Dawn for being like, I never use the W word anymore. She learned her lesson.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, Anya does go to Spike, and not only does she get some sympathy, because she got sympathy from Buffy even, you know, when she was like, I know what he did sucked, but he's still my friend. So, like, she is getting some sympathy there, but she's able to relate to Spike in a way that is kind of unexpected. But when you look at it, their situations, while pretty different, have some common threads, and the fact that they can kind of understand each other is really interesting, and not a pairing that, you know, comes up on screen a whole lot. And it definitely leads somewhere. So what did you guys think of the Spike and Anya sex? That definitely happened.
It was fun. Because now he's kind of like getting with all the vengeance demons. So I like that. That's cool. Notch in the belt, as they say.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's Spike, and I don't know. I just don't know. I understand why they worked well in this scene together. Like, I understand what they were both looking for, and they were there for each other, and that's totally fine. But I don't know. It just weirds me out.
Can I just say how awesome Anya's hair looks? It's all like, witchy. It looks like, yeah, it's like so fabulous and full of secrets. And she's like going after Spike here. And I love her playing drunk. I think it's so much fun. This whole scene just made me giddy. I think I actually ship them for real, not just like sex-wise now. I think I'm realizing as speaking of it, because they're really cute together in like a very demented way.
They can really relate to each other. And I find that interesting. And you know what? Favorite part about all of this, like, I don't necessarily agree that what they did was a good thing, because they're using each other, but they both know that they're using each other, and they both kind of, like, the part that I like so much is that at the end, Anya obviously feels very guilty about it, and she looks back at Spike, and Spike just kind of nods, and in that moment, you realize that they both don't want to be with each other. They both don't have feelings for each other. They both kind of needed that in the moment. And while Anya might be feeling some regret, I don't think it's necessarily something that she's going to be super broken up about. Like, it happened, it's over with, it was good for a time. And I don't necessarily ship them, but that dynamic is very interesting to me.
It was... You might not initially think about the fact that their storylines are running parallel to each other, but once they start like talking, it makes a lot of sense that they are the ones that find each other. And I don't ship them in any way, shape, or form. I would maybe friendship them, I guess, if anything. But I think it makes perfect sense because they're both hurting, and they're both looking to feel something other than the heartbreak that they're feeling at the moment, and they found someone who's understanding them and talking to them like an actual person. Like, the thing with Spike is he doesn't really feel like he's being even treated like a person through this whole thing. And then Anya's feeling like she's been like everyone's team Xander, which they aren't necessarily, they're kind of like trying to be Switzerland with, but for Anya, it feels like everyone is team Anya. So they're each looking for someone to be on their side, even if it's for a very short period of time. and they just need to feel something. So I think it makes total sense. They have no interest in doing anything beyond that moment, and we see it in that very telling look. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it makes a lot of sense. And it's not like they were trying to hurt anyone because they hardly knew there was a secret camera in the magic box.
Exactly. But the thing is, they do hurt people, which is very interesting, and I want to spend some time talking about this because, first of all, let's go with Xander, because the way Xander reacts to this, he is completely disgusted. Ugh. And I know, like, it's as if, not as great. If he's, and actually,
he's had everything done wrong to him. And well, nothing on the other side.
And I want to talk to Kristen about this because I know, Kristen, you're more sympathetic towards Xander. And I think his reaction here wasn't great, but he is hurting over this. Now, does he have a right to feel that way? I mean, they're broken up. Like, she can do whatever and whoever she wants, but he still loves her and it's still going to hurt him. But what did you specifically think about the way that he reacted to this?
Yeah. It's not great. Like, he has no say over what she does. They are broken up. He called off the wedding. As, you know, as far as he and Anya are concerned, he has no say. So, yeah, he's completely wrong in that. But at the same time, he's a person. And he's watching this woman that he still loves, and you know why he broke off everything. It wasn't because he doesn't love her. It's because he's terrified of what they're going to turn each other into. So, you know, after all of that, he still cares about her. So seeing her sleeping with a guy he hates, of course, in that moment, he's going to say really stupid things. And I do not excuse anything he said. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say, but like, he's hurt because he absolutely hates Spike all on Spike's own. And then, you know, it's Anya and it's the woman he loves, and yes, he screwed up, but you know, and you don't expect to see that. They didn't expect to be filmed. It's, you know, it's one of those perfect storms where no one, you know, it never should have been anything Xander would have had to see. If he had heard about it, I'm sure his reaction wouldn't have been as severe. But having to actually see that on camera, mm-hmm. as a person, like, imagine, you know, someone you love sleeping with someone else and having to see it. Like, that, I can see where he would be hurt by that. He, again, doesn't excuse his reactions and the extreme way he like talks about being disgusted by her, but it's, you know, he's human. He's going to react.
What bothers me a lot is that when he finds out Buffy also slept with Spike, he just walks away and like, he's disgusted still. And that type of judgment is something that I don't really know, like, what his problem is, because, yes, I understand not liking Spike, but Xander has no say over the lives of these women, and him being so judgmental isn't going to gain him any favors. And instead of understanding why they did what they did or trying to sympathize with Spike, who has been very helpful to the Scoobies, and he's not perfect by any means, but he's come a long way since we first met him. The idea that Xander can be so high and mighty about all of this just really bugs me.
Yeah.
Yeah, his reaction to Buffy is, like, I'm glad he walked away, because if anything else he would have said would have been completely irrational and unnecessary, and just because he has no say over what Buffy does, like, no say at all. Not that he has any say over what Anya does, but like, he has even less place to talk about Buffy. So I don't understand necessarily his reaction there. I think it's just, yeah, he needed to get the hell out of there and not say anything more.
This is a pattern with Xander that we have seen since season one, that he is in a lot of ways a misogynist, and he has developed, but this was very much a regression of his character, and he in some ways, I think, feels entitled to women. Like, I genuinely think this reaction shows his kind of core feelings towards the women in his life. And I've seen people that, like, critics talking about how he can be okay with, so okay with Willow's sexuality because he never has to worry about another man touching his best friend again. So I think he has some really deep misogynistic issues, and this is a real explosion of toxic masculinity when he goes and beats up on Spike, who he very well knows cannot fight back, and who even says, hey, Chip, can't fight back, and he doesn't care. So I think there is no excuse for him and the way he reacted. I think it's a reflection of some really screwed up internal values that he holds and has sort of had trying to been grow out of, but really hasn't.
I find that so interesting because he, like, I definitely agree with you. I think in a lot of ways he does harbor a lot of misogyny, which is interesting because he's surrounded by incredible women, women who are extremely smart and strong physically and talented. And you would think that would kind of open his ideas to, you know, or his open his eyes to the fact that women are very capable of doing what he can do, or even things he can't do, you know, go above and beyond him. But at the same time, maybe that lends itself to his misogyny.
Yeah,
because he's always feeling like he's not good enough.
I was going to say this, it's very reflective of the trio. His actions, his reaction to Spike is very reflective of how the trio, especially were like treating Katrina before they murdered her. Like, that's another issue of toxic masculinity there. So I think we're seeing a lot of examples of issues of men having really unhealthy attitudes towards women in this season.
Mitch, you said you don't want to see Xander and Anya get back together, right?
Oh yeah, definitely do not want them back together ever.
Okay, what about you, Kristen?
I don't think that what Xander did at the wedding is unforgivable. I think that it's going to take time for them to reestablish trust. But ultimately, it's, you know, I would think it would take them a while if they ever got back to it. Or, you know, I don't know if I want them together after all of this. Like, he did put her through a lot of crap and, you know, basically for his own reasons, and so it's like, you know, I kind of understand if she's done and can't trust him and doesn't want to trust him again. Like, that she is absolutely, you know, and has every right to go there. I don't know, like, they were really sweet before, and what I liked about them is that, like, he embraced the fact that she wasn't necessarily always human and, like, had this past, and, you know, he didn't seem to be bothered by that, and they worked. And so the fact that they've lost a little bit of that, of their lightheartedness and their fun, like, that's what I liked the most about them. And so now with all of this going on, it you know, it's not necessarily the same Xander and Anya. So for me, it's kind of touch and go. We'll see what happens from here on out.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to keep in mind, because think of all the things that happened in the last couple of seasons where we've heard from people being like, oh my God, that's totally unforgivable, or I can never look at this person the same way again. And it constantly evolves because this is a good television show with strong character arcs. And I think not everybody is meant to be forgivable, but you never know what's going to happen in the future. And, you know, that's not a spoiler or anything, but we've seen before that people change, and sometimes it's for the worst, sometimes it's for the best. So keep an open mind, and we'll see what happens. But I want to touch on a couple other things before we move into favorite scenes and favorite lines, a couple of odds and ends for this episode. One being that Buffy and Dawn are really working on their relationship. And this was so adorable to me because Dawn is definitely she said some really mean things to Buffy in the last episode. And granted, you know, she feels very hurt by a lot of the things that have been going on. And she reacts the way she does because she's still young and naive and very emotional. But she's definitely stepping forward and trying to be better. And I think Buffy is also trying to focus on her a little bit more to prove to her, yes, I do want you here. Yes, you are very important to me. So kind of wanted to just get a feel for how you guys think Dawn is kind of coming along. I know sometimes it's like two steps forward, one step back. But Mitch, right now, are you feeling good about Dawn, or do you still think she's super annoying?
Her not making a wish in this episode made me feel a little bit happier about having her around. I've had some issues. Didn't like exactly how she was reacting to the whole Riley coming back thing. Like, she acted like she was the center of the universe for that whole thing. And I was like, girl, you need to put like your sister's drama ahead of you for this, because this is a big friggin' deal. Regardless, I think she's at least not like tripping Buffy when she's like doing handstands anymore. So that's some progress. But maybe the best thing here is that she's, I guess, now that she's been caught, you know, going around to the stores with Buffy and admitting all that she's stolen. And as it's meant to be a funny skit, I still think that it shows some growth, some maturity in this character.
What about you, Kristen?
I've always found Dawn, you know, she was a little grating at the beginning, but the last like season or so, she's been interesting. I like her. I like what her and Buffy are up to right now. I like that they're trying to like step back and be sisters and go shopping, even if she can't enter any of the stores. And, you know, like it's cute. Like, I like seeing them try to get back to sisters after the craziness of last episode. And like, it's nice to see Buffy, you know, trying to get to some semblance of normal. Like, she didn't have a sister forever and now she does. And it's time to, you know, have that fun. Sisters can be fun. They can be a really big pain in your ass. They can also be a lot of fun. So I'm happy that they're trying to kind of take it that direction rather than the, she's my little sister and I have to, you know, take care of her and it's all on me. And, you know, Buffy's kind of starting to feel, I think she's starting to feel a little more normal. And so she can now embrace the fun of being alive, and doing that with Dawn, I think, kind of helps her to forget about the things she's lost and look forward now.
I think Dawn is A+ in this episode. For really, for what she does at the end, when Buffy sees Spike on the camera and gets a really hurt look on her face and follows her out into the yard and sits with her and is really understanding, like, that is just A+ sister moment. She like immediately realizes what must be causing her pain, because so she's not being self-centered in that at all. She's recognizing Buffy's issue, recognizing what it must mean, and then she goes after her and is really sweet to her and is really like comforting and is not judgmental, complete 180 from Xander, but she's just like, oh, that was a thing, okay, like, I wish you'd told me, but okay. So I think this was a really good showing for her and was really supportive and really shows how healthy that relationship has the potential to be.
I'm always a little surprised that Dawn picks up on that, to be honest. And maybe it is because I expect her to be a little more self-centered, but the idea that she notices that look on Buffy's face, and even more so the fact that she doesn't overreact about it, that she is there for her sister, even if she doesn't necessarily agree with it. Although, to be fair, Dawn has had a pretty good relationship with Spike, probably the best of anybody. And I think that she understands what Buffy kind of saw in Spike and what she needed in Spike, even though she's being, you know, she's pretty young. But yeah, it always surprises me a little bit, but I still love it. I agree that end scene is really lovely between the two of them. All right, so let's talk about Willow and Tara, because throughout this episode, we see them kind of being friends and, you know, they've gotten coffee and they've been talking. And at the end of the episode, they basically get back together. And I want to know if you guys are excited about this, if you're, you know, cautiously optimistic, or if you're really not looking forward to what this is.
Tara's a beautiful soul, and I don't think she realizes how big of a mistake she's making by getting back together with Willow. She's thinking of lust probably in that moment when she was like, can we just skip past all of that and just jump to like you holding me? And I was like, oh, been there, done that, bad idea.
But to be fair, to play a little devil's advocate here, Willow has been doing a really good job staying away from magic. I mean, to the point where saving somebody's life, like last episode in Buffy's life, she could have done a potion and figured this thing out a lot faster, but she didn't because she knows what that means for her. And I think Willow, while she still has her problems, has come a long way. So, I mean, does that, you're still worried that the relationship could be very toxic?
Yeah, definitely. I think I have to be for Tara's sake. If no one else is going to protect her, I, the viewer, will. Because God, she erased your memory, and regardless of power or magic or whatever else, knowing that that's in someone's capabilities, like what they're willing to do to prevent you from living a life, it was so desperate to cling on to the relationship in such a horrible, toxic way, and that's something I can never let go.
See, for me, like, that was Willow the addict, and mm-hmm. Willow the addict is sober right now, and she's always going to be an addict, but if she can stay away from magic, if she can, you know, keep her sobriety, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be together if that's what they want. And Tara, if Tara can forgive her for everything that went down and understand that that the problem with what was happening with Willow was the addiction, and, you know, if she's willing to stay clean, then that is something that could work. If, you know, if she relapses down the road, then that's something they have to conquer together. I like them. I think, you know, with Willow making she's seriously dedicated to her sobriety. She's doing the work every day. She's, you know, fighting against the need and the nature of wanting to use magic. And, you know, I give her, this is her chance. This is her chance to prove that she really has given it up and that she's going to be a better girlfriend to Tara. And I'm all there for it.
What about you, Caitlin, before I say my bit?
I am hesitant, but I agree with Kristen that this was like, you have to look at Willow as an addict, and that her lowest points were her in the throes of her addiction, and keeping the sobriety is optimistic. But I think Tara needs to be careful, basically. Like, she needs to be aware of Willow's pitfalls, basically. But if she's going into this open-minded, open-eyed, that's her choice. And really, the biggest issue is Willow was taking away her choices. So mm-hmm. as long as she's making her own choices, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I definitely fall closest to Kristen, because I do feel like that was Willow the addict. And while that doesn't necessarily excuse what she did, because what she did was wrong, the fact of the matter is there was an outside substance that was controlling her thoughts and her actions. It was manipulating her. And I think her being sober, it's best to give somebody a second chance. It's best to give them the benefit of the doubt. Now, it's going to always be something that she struggles with, and Tara's, you know, always going to have to deal with that, and it's going to be a bumpy road. But there are plenty of people out in the real world who, you know, were alcoholics and are 20, 30, 40, 50 years sober, And it is a struggle, and they're always going to want to have that drink, but it doesn't mean they're incapable of walking away from that. And I think that's very important. So I'm not going to lie, a little excited. Actually, we can jump into favorite scenes now because that kind of goes with mine. But first, I wanted to read out this GIF in here. I don't know what this is from, but it's Amber, who plays Tara, at some con or something, talking about this scene. And she goes, the scene when I'm in my big leather jacket and I come back and we make up, talking about Willow, we're doing the scene and I accidentally slip Alice in the tongue. She got real into it.
You can tell, like, this is the first, like, lesbian makeup we've had on the show, and I was hooting and hollering. I was like, get it, yes!
It was really... I love them. Actually, both of my scenes, my scene and my line, go with them. My favorite scene was just awkward Tara and Willow talking about getting coffee and, like, I don't have any friends. Well, I have friends, but not those kind of friends. And it's just... it's painful for me to watch because of the secondhand embarrassment. Like, it's so hard for me not to cover my eyes, but I love it so much because they're both so excited again. And yes, the problems are there in the back of their mind. Like, they've got a real shot again. They're both in really good places, and I love seeing that potential there between them. What about you, Caitlin? What's your favorite scene?
Mine was all the Dawn and Buffy stuff because I really just thought they were adorable. And you can really see how much they're trying. Like, Buffy has really taken, like, Dawn, when she got them all locked in the house, like, her issues there. Like, she's really taken it seriously. And you can just see how much they really love each other. And just, you know, the shopping trip and... you know, Buffy being forgiving of Dawn, and then Dawn being there for Buffy after she sees the video feed. I really, really loved the sisterly relationship in this episode.
I love when everyone can be mature.
I know, it's amazing how
it's good so it great. What about you, Kristen? I like yours.
Speaking of maturity, I loved the opening scene with the terrible trio, or whatever we call them, like, chasing down the vamps on four-wheelers, and then, like, two of them, I think it was Jonathan and the blonde one, like, they, like, pretended to, like, crash, and then they awkwardly jumped off the four-wheelers, like, bold, and I'm like, you didn't crash, there was no reason for you to jump off, like, I don't know what your problem is. It was so funny, and I'm like, you guys are such a hot mess, like, what is even, like, how are you the villains? Like, what is going on? So, yeah, it was just a ridiculous scene, and I appreciated it.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, even funnier that they had to sneak up on Spike and Buffy, and Spike sitting up there like freaking Batman holding this vampire out in front of him, and I'm just like, this show sometimes is so ridiculous.
Yeah, it was great.
It was great. What about you, Mitch?
I liked when Hal, Frigga, Anya were having some girl/vengeance demon talk. I thought that was great. And I like that Spike walked in and saw it and commented on it being such. I like when Halfrick comes about whenever she's doing anything. But I also think it's of note here that she's not, as I was saying, in the demon makeup. So interesting that she would choose to do that. I don't really know. Maybe they were just having like a lazy day on set and they're like, God, we don't want to put her in makeup for like 6 hours. So we're just gonna have her come on in as.
Weren't they out in a cafe?
They were the Magic Box.
But if it was open, anyone could walk in at any time, like Spice.
Yeah. Okay, favorite lines, and mine is the one at the end when Tara's like, it's a long and important process, and can we just skip it? Can you just be kissing me now? And I know this relationship comes with a lot of issues, but like, it's so cute.
It is really cute. And like the smile on Willow's face. It's like, yeah.
All right, Caitlin, what's your favorite line? Yeah. She pauses for a second and she's like, yes, actually, that is something I can do.
Yeah.
ahead, Caitlin.
So mine is when Anya and Spike are commiserating with their whiskey, and they're both talking about, you know, being in love and how it's gross. And Anya's like, and I'm off my guard, happy. I'm singing in the shower and doing my sexy dance. And Spike goes, exactly. I have no dance.
You're a damn liar, Spike.
Seriously. Also, can you just take a moment to talk about Spike outing Buffy? Because screw him. Because I say screw him because his motives there were just to be nasty.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I mostly agree with you. I think the reason why I kind of didn't mind is because I've been annoyed. I just wanted Buffy to tell everybody. I wanted her to trust her friends. So I'm glad that it's kind of out in the open now. But yeah, the way he did it was not cool.
Like, he had wanted to just not be a secret, and those mm-hmm. motives were understandable, but the way he does it in this scene is very much just being spiteful and nasty, yeah. which yeah. is very icky.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she did tell him that he could do it, and it almost felt like she was calling his bluff, but that's weird, because why would she do that? Because she knows he wants to do it, so... Mm-hmm. It was just a very odd scenario that she would give him permission and then he would do it in like a nasty way and then she'd get angry. Okay, this is like just too complicated. I don't know. Well, I think everyone's just going to move on at this point because there's like way too much going on for them to even process this. So whatever.
I think that it's fair that she said, like, you can tell them they're not going to hate me. I just tried to kill everybody and they still don't hate me. So like, what do you think you're going to do? Which is fair, but I also think this was like not the right time to bring it up.
And also the scene in the crypt when she brings the camera, he is like, I would never do anything to hurt you, and then literally does this just to hurt her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Demon.
Yeah. I just, you know, he's being like, I would never hurt you. Like, that's kind of a lot of what your relationship has been based on.
Yeah. Actually. Literally. Yeah.
So kind of not true.
All right, Kristen, what's your favorite line?
In a twist of fate, mine is not funny. Mine are always funny, but I just couldn't find a funny one I liked this week. I did like the very end of that scene, though, where Spike says, bloody Xander, buggered up everything. You know, I wish, and Anya goes, don't. Mm-hmm. More or less, I love this because I don't think that her don't comes from her having feelings for Xander and falling back into that. I think this is just Anya saying, I was being petty before. I wanted him to hurt because I was hurting. He's hurting now. I'm not going to kick him while he's down. Like, I needed that before. She needed that anger before. But now that her and Spike have had this moment and she's let go of some of that, she's found someone to commiserate with, she doesn't need all of the anger she had. And so it's Anya moving on. It's Anya taking a step forward, and I really like that.
What about you, Mitch?
Mine is when Buffy and Dawn are out shopping, and or lack thereof, I guess. And Buffy's going on about the toothbrush. She says, yeah, but you stole a toothbrush. As far as rebellious teenagers go, you're kind of square. Dawn just goes, dental hygiene is important. And I'm like, you know, good comeback.
That was so cute.
It had a mother of pearl handle.
I want a toothbrush with a mother of pearl handle.
That's a fancy toothbrush. Like, seriously, what the heck?
Especially disposable toothbrushes are to buy a mother of pearl toothbrush. That's
if
a thing.
Like a hairbrush. That's one thing.
Yeah, a hairbrush would have been like something that's more feasible to use. Right? So I would just probably look at the thing. I'd probably have it on display in my bathroom shelf. Like, look at this.
That is so weird.
With a mother of pearl toothbrush in a trophy case.
Yes.
With a spotlight.
Dental hygiene is important.
Yeah, a plaque that says that.
A plaque.
Uh-huh. Damn, I'm good.
Oh, this is slowly devolving. Okay, let's talk about Angel, episode 318, Double or Nothing. In this episode, it's time to pay up when a soul sucker catches up with Gunn to make good on his debts. Gunn strives to give Fred the best day ever and seals the deal with a literal pancake kiss before turning around and breaking her heart. Good thing she's a smart cookie who knows how to spot trouble. Meanwhile, Cordelia's finally back with lots of presents and a Kate Gosselin haircut I really don't love. And as Angel sits sadly, she makes sure he's not alone, reminding him that he's loved even as Wesley sits mute.
Excuse you, Ariana. Cordy's hair is phenomenal.
I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about that because Cordelia is back, which is really exciting. Although Ariana does point out she's not really being super proactive. She's kind of being the emotional support for everybody. But I have to say, it's so clear that Cordelia is the glue that holds this team together. And it's just nice that she's back now.
Oh my God, it was a breath of fresh air as soon as she walked in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Except for, yes, with the Kate Gosselin haircut. It's a struggle. I don't like to talk about her hair as much as I do in the end of the day. I know that she didn't like her extensions. That's why they initially changed her hair. It's like maybe just some consistency. Like maybe I'd get used to the Kate Gosselin haircut if it stuck around for like a season. Most characters do in Buffy and Angel. But her hair changes so consistently that I can't get used to it. And then I'm like, whiplash, and it's like hair bending to the extreme.
She's like an actual woman who like cuts her hair and stuff.
I was gonna say it, but I was like, none.
No, that's a fair point. Yeah, I guess like if this was real life, that wouldn't be like such a thing for me. I think it being a TV show, it looks different for me. I don't know, like it almost defines like a new season or a new character or a new arc or something. Usually it's what haircuts tend to mean to me on TV shows, hence hair bending on Avatar and Korra was always about like new haircut, new me. But I guess Angel is gonna make me let that go because it doesn't matter as much, except for Wesley's. Yeah, did true. Matter his hair got really shaggy this season and he became kind of evil.
Let's talk about that too, because Cordy is kind of sticking around Angel as much as possible, being there just kind of for moral support. And she doesn't leave his side very often, except for maybe to eat or to go talk to somebody. Except the one person she doesn't go talk to is Wesley. And Caitlin, I know you have some thoughts on this.
It just seems out of character to me that she would not go see him because, you know, once she gets the lowdown on what happened, like, I feel like she, of all people who has this really close relationship with him, would have gone to see him. At least, if nothing else, just to go see him. Like, even if she was mad, I feel like she would have gone to see him because she, of all people, knows Wesley. Like, they're very close. And she is also separated from this slightly because she wasn't there when this whole thing unfolded. So she has a little distance. She can look at it with some objectivity that the others who were involved in the whole drama can't. So it just seems really odd to me that she doesn't even mention that she was going to go see him once she feels like Angel can be left alone or something. You know, like, it really felt like there was something missing with her not even really mentioning Wesley's name at any point.
I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, she's removed from the situation. Like, being there, I can understand that, like, Fred and Gunn and even Lauren, like, they can't separate what it was like to feel betrayed by him, even if he was doing it for the right reasons. Whereas Cordy never felt that betrayal because she wasn't there. So she can look at it clearly and say, you know, he was being Wesley. He was doing the best thing he could. Yes, he should have told them, but, you know, he did the best he could in that scenario. He was doing it for the betterment of Connor and Angel and everybody. So yeah, I was a little disappointed that she didn't even seem to show, like, the reticence for not going. Like, I need to be with Angel. He really needs me. I want to see Wesley, but I'm not there. I can't go. Like, I would have liked to have at least seen that she thought about him and, you know, wanted to go even if she didn't think she could or something like that.
Yeah, because we have to remember that Cordelia and Wesley had the first meaningful relationship that Wesley had in this universe that we've seen, I guess. They were a thing for a while. And the fact that she didn't bring that up, it's it felt like some of Cordelia's personality traits were taking a backseat for the main drama. There's a lot going on, as usual, in any given episode. I would have hoped that her coming back would have been more of a thing, but I know it's tough, too, because there's also her own life going on. For whatever reason, she wasn't on the show for the period of time she wasn't. I'm sure she didn't want to have to come back to such an extreme episode. So giving her maybe, like, you know, a lighter script with, like, maybe some scenes where she gets to sit and read a magazine as opposed to having to interact as much, that's probably better for, you know, like a homecoming in terms of the actress, if I had to be her.
And I think it should be pointed out as well. I mean, I still think she should have gone and seen Wes too, but I think she's hyper-focused on Angel right now and what he's going through, and she's a very empathetic person. Not that there isn't plenty of empathy to be found with Wes, considering he can't even talk because his throat was slashed, but Angel just lost a child, and Cordelia loved that child as well, and I think she just needs to be with Angel in this moment, and doesn't necessarily excuse her not going to see Wes, but I can kind of see why she's so focused on Angel.
I could have even been okay with, like, one of the scenes where she's, like, out of, like, she's gone to eat or something, where we see her, like, leaving a message on Wes's answering machine for when he gets home or something. Just like, hey, I got back and I heard what happened. I'm thinking of you, or just something, you know, just to be like, I acknowledge Wesley exists because he is a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Fred goes to visit him, though, and she has some choice words for him. And I think that's actually very important because she is sympathetic toward, you know, what he was trying to do, but at the same time, she's very hurt because he didn't trust her. He didn't trust any of them. And everything that's going on right now is really isolating Wesley. He leaves the hospital alone. He goes back to his place, which is trashed and dark, and you can just tell he's kind of going inside of himself even more than he already has. And I don't know if it's guilt or anger or just general depression, but he's not himself. And he kind of, I don't want to say he has nobody right now, because I think the others do understand what he was attempting to do, but that doesn't really change the fact that Connor's gone because of him.
I find this whole Wesley thing still very odd. I just don't know how he survived. There was such a jump in narrative there, and I'm still, like, stuck in the trauma of that moment. And then to see him being alive and, like, having interactions with people, even though it's not him speaking, this all seems so weird. It just feels like this was shoved in a way. It doesn't feel like any of this, his injury or his plot, seemed like it was the way it was meant to go. I don't know why they're putting the character on this path. I think I maybe need to see the full ends to understand it some, but for now I'm feeling like I just want my old Wesley back. And this is kind of back to some of the stuff I was saying before during Billy, when I was like, I don't like that they're painting him in any negative light, because I like Wesley just the way he is. Don't mess him up, please. And they continue to bring this character down like a negative path, and it just makes me sad.
That's true, but I also think it's good to see characters change and evolve, and sometimes it's not always in the way that you want it to, but I think that makes for a more interesting story.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of lessons that Wesley has to learn from this, and hopefully there will be time for him to, like, either help get Connor back or, you know, basically show the team that he's willing to not make those mistakes again. I think there's a lot that can come from this storyline. So it might not be pleasant, but I think there's a reason why Wesley is going through all of this.
Going back to Fred's visit, I couldn't help but draw a comparison between Fred telling Wesley to never come back to the hotel with Gunn breaking, quote unquote, breaking up with her. Like, to me, it felt very much like Fred is trying to protect Wesley a bit. Like,
oh yeah, she tells him if Angel sees you again, he's going to kill you.
Yeah. And you know, the implication is no one's probably going to stop him. Yeah. So,
I doubt he would do it in cold, though. He'd probably have to be provoked.
I mean, I think Fred worries that seeing him is just enough of a provocation.
At this point. Right. Yeah. It didn't take much when he tried to choke him in the hospital. Like, I don't think he actually provoked him, but that, you know, it didn't take much. It was just seeing Wesley that...
I mean, it wasn't even just seeing Wesley. Like, that was premeditated. He went to the hospital knowing exactly what he was going to do.
Yeah. But actually being there and seeing him, I think it was just too much. Like, he knew he was going there to see him, but could not contain the beast, basically. Like, just, nope.
Before we jump into the main point of this episode, I just want to give a shout-out to Gru, who's back. And he's cute. He doesn't serve much of a purpose in this episode, but he kind of gets them where they need to go. And he's funny and adorable while he does it. So,
hail nice potential clients.
He's so awkward. And his eyes, they're so weird. And I love them.
He kind of looks like an alien. Not going to lie.
He does, but like a really attractive one. I don't understand.
I just find him weird looking. He weirds me.
But I like that. Like the fact that he looks weird.
We should leave these white particular things behind. Like, love him. He's a treasure.
Yeah. I love that nobody really got, like, mad at him because they know he just doesn't understand. They're like, oh, this is where we need to go.
Okay, we have a better... Okay, let's go. We know where he is. Let's just get out of here. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, so Gunn sold his soul for a truck. Let's just talk about that right from the beginning, because this part kind of made me mad because it was really anticlimactic and you're led to believe he did it for kind of a noble reason. And it was just stupid. But to play devil's advocate a little bit, like, he didn't think that he was going to live very long. So for him, it was inconsequential. That truck has saved a ton of people's lives. So, like, I kind of get it, but, like, it was stupid in the end. Because this episode had a lot of very high stakes, especially for Gunn and Fred's relationship. And to find out that all of this happened because he sold his soul for a truck was just like, all right, sure, I guess.
I put a note in the doc, too, that... Gunn at that point should not have known about demons because in episode 206 they go to the demon karaoke bar, they go to Caritas, and he sees like all the demons for the first time and says, okay, what I want to know is how'd I live in LA all my life and not notice weird ass stuff was going on. So he knew about vampires. He should not have known about demons to go to a demon casino and sell his soul. Consistently, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I'm trying to think my way around that, but I can't at the moment. And like, hey, it happens. Sometimes there are plot holes like in episodes maybe they were, and series.
Maybe they were all glamored and so it didn't look, but he sold his soul. Like, he sold his soul. You can't do that to a guy. Like, it's going to be a demon. So there really is no explaining their way out of that.
I think there's something interesting in this idea that Gunn used to have this really nihilistic worldview because he thought he was going to die young because of, you know, killing vampires and everything. And didn't have anything to live for, and now he does. I think there's something interesting in that story. I don't think this episode does a very good job of exploring it.
Let's get into some of the questions you have about the Buffy versus exploration of the soul, because I'm interested. I'm not sure that I've necessarily thought too deeply about this, but I'm interested in what you have to say regarding like this episode and how this kind of changed your perspective, maybe.
Well, it's just, I feel like the way the Buffyverse talks about souls is not internally consistent. And this episode is another issue with that. Like, Angel is a vampire with a soul. Initially in Buffy, they were treating that like it was almost like this physical thing within him, you know, that can be inserted and removed, and that it gives him, you know, this moral compass. And then but what's actually like animating his body is some kind of demon. And then we have the whole thing with Spike trying to figure out, like, can Spike love because he doesn't have a soul, that kind of thing. We've had that discussion. And then there's this idea of selling a soul, and like the guy kills the guy, sucks the soul out of, except that like there was that kid earlier in Angel that didn't have a soul and was kind of a psychopath, but he didn't have a soul. So like, what does it mean to have a soul and not have a soul? And then they had this whole line in this episode that like they go to get Gunn's debt paid because they saw that he was going to give his soul to Fred, which makes no sense because Angel really loved Buffy. He didn't give his soul to her. Like, I don't understand. Like, that doesn't make sense. And it was like the whole thing that pushed that plot forward. And if it was a metaphorical giving his soul to her, then why did it push the plot forward? I guess I'm just... And then there was the episode where Angel, like, starts becoming jealous because he took some happy pills. So it's just, like, the show does not feel like it has a... Or the universe as a whole, at this point to me, does not feel entirely internally consistent with what it thinks a soul is. Can you live without a soul? We've seen examples of yes and examples of no. What is a soul?
To be fair, I think this episode was just filler, and I think it was meant to show how long Angel is sort of suffering through this idea that he's not going to get Connor back, and then finally at the end kind of not giving up, but letting go in a way. And I think they needed something where Angel's sort of sidelined for most of the episode and to focus on somebody else. And in this case, it happened to be Gunn. And they just sort of pulled some things out of thin air and made it work. But
so say that Gunn gave up his future, not his soul. You know, say he got 7 years to live or something. Just the soul is a very important concept in the universe, especially because Angel is a vampire with a soul. That was central to the Shanshu prophecy from Angel season 1. Like, souls are super important, and I don't like them playing fast and loose with that if it's such an important concept.
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair.
I was a little like weirded out by the giving his soul to Fred thing, because I'm like, that's not, like, a thing. We've never discussed that before. Like, what the heck? So, yeah, the whole impetus for this episode was kind of weird. Like, why now? Like, why all of a sudden? And clearly they had a reason why, and they wanted this story, and so they kind of pushed it forward. But I totally understand what you're getting at, like, Caitlin. And it's definitely strange.
Yeah, you bring up good points, and this is usually the kind of thing that I would question, aka the science. So thank you for taking it over for me for a bit.
I find in general this a very interesting discussion with Buffy. Like, I think, you know, we do so much looking at Angel versus Angelus. We're looking at Spike and his, you know, is he capable of love without a soul, because love is so central to that character, and Angel losing his soul because of love. And just this, I think it's really interesting what they often want to do at the center of these big stories, especially about characters like Angel and Spike and demons in general. Like, does Lorne have a soul, for example? You know, like, I think they have some very interesting things that they're playing with, but when they throw in things like this episode, it muddies the water and it makes it just very confusing to try and figure out what exactly they think a soul is. And that just makes the bigger discussions harder to parse.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Honestly, that bothered me less than kind of where Gunn ended up before he went back to the Soul Sucker, in that he planned this whole beautiful day with Fred and they're having a really great time. And then at the end of it, he decides to hit below the belt in order to protect her. And like, this is such a tired trope for me. It's happened so many times. And like, we literally just saw how badly it went when Wes didn't confide in his friends. So why wouldn't Gunn do the same thing and let them know what was going on? And so maybe they could come up with a plan, something like that. But what he says to Fred is really cruel. And setting aside like everything else, is that really what he would want the last thing he said to her to be?
It was just unnecessary to that degree. He didn't need to talk about her body shape, for instance. That was just gross.
Yeah.
And it felt like that was almost like a thing he was admitting now that he felt like he could let it all out and she wouldn't be able to tell the truths from the lies. So he's like, yeah, and I could talk about how I don't find her so sexy because of her thin body structure. And I was just... That one stuck out to me a bit nastier than the rest and completely unnecessary. She was already done. You didn't need to like keep kicking her while she was down.
Yeah, it was really gross.
I wonder if that's a insecurity she had expressed to him at some point and he was using everything he could to push her away so she would be maybe less pained when he died.
Well, and I think part of this is him trying to keep her safe because they, like, said if he doesn't sacrifice himself and, like, make that clear that they'll take her too. And so, like, I think part of this was cutting off the feelings. And he did, it's a panic move because you know he didn't plan this. He's looking around at everyone and seeing all of these people and he kind of, he panics and realizes that the only way that he's going to be able to walk away from this is if, like, he cuts it off right now. And you can see in his eyes, like, he can't, he's having trouble doing it, but, like, he feels like it's the only way, and it's not the only way, but he's being a guy and not thinking it through in the moment. And, like, yeah, I had a lot of issues with the stuff he said. I understood what was going on and why he did it. It just, like, he did. He hit way below the belt. Like, she was walking away. Like, she was done. She had accepted that she wasn't enough and that he, you know, and then he just keeps hitting. And I'm like, dude, like, you're done. Walk away. Go make your big sacrificial lamb moment thing now. Like, you can go. And
the thing is, though, like, it was so stupid. Why would you plan this wonderful, perfect day just to break up with somebody in such a nasty manner afterwards, which I think is like how Fred knew something was wrong. She was like, he would never say those things to me unless he was trying to push me away in order to protect me, which I really loved how it didn't, like, it kind of bothered her, but she figured out pretty quickly what else was going on. So, like, kudos to Fred, but, like, I don't know. I just think it was poor writing on the show's part. And
I didn't think he had ever planned to be mean and break her heart. I think he planned didn't to take her home and tuck her in and then walk away and just disappear. Like, I really think that's was his master plan. And when all of a sudden she was tired and didn't want to, you know, like, he panicked.
Well, yeah, and she, like, she's like, we don't have to shove our entire lives in one day. And then he kind of reacts funny and she realizes something is wrong. And that's when he gets nasty.
Yeah.
Like, he's
but it still doesn't make logical sense. Like, did he really expect her to believe that? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. But that's beside the point.
I don't think he's thinking logically at that point.
No, I guess not. But, you know, he does go to the casino and Angel and Cordelia, they and the others help him out, and they kill the guy, or they attempt to kill the guy after a game of cut the deck. Like, I love how Angel was so confident, and then he's like, a three, really? But it was pretty funny. And yeah, they chop off his head. He's not really dead, but the rest of the... Oh, it was so disgusting. I was eating while I was watching that. It was really freaking disgusting.
It was like the reverse transformation of Indiana Jones when they open up the Ark and you like melt away. It was like if you melted away and then started building back up.
All of a sudden I hear, ew, from the other room. And I'm like, I know exactly what part she's
Yeah. So,
is this another loan shark thing? Do they have another loan shark here? I'm pretty sure that the lackey was a loan shark.
I mean, not a literal loan shark like in Buffy, but I think
he was kind of sharky. He had dorsal fin. He had gills, didn't he?
The other one looked like a shark. Like, you could tell.
Yeah. Debatable on this one. I'm with you there.
Yeah. But Gunn and Fred make up. He tells her that he loves her, and she makes him apologize again for everything he said. And I think, you know, again, handling this very maturely, and I think that she had every right to be extremely upset with him, but kind of understood where he was coming from, even if where he was coming from was stupid. Yeah. And
Fred's the VIP in this episode. She just knocks definitely. It out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah,
definitely. Fred is like the Tara.
She is.
Yeah. Too good for this world. And at the end of the episode, Angel disassembles the crib. And it's very sad. And Ariana put in here, again, why has no one tried opening up a Hell Dimension portal? Because it isn't a Hell Dimension. And because, or at least, like, you can't get there through a portal. You have to rip fabric of reality.
We talked about this in the last episode. Yeah. That was not a good enough excuse for audio.
So, unfortunately, very difficult to do something like that.
I mean,
so,
I really doubt that we're not going to see, like, at least an adult version of Connor come back and be like, I fought them all and I'm back, Dad. But I don't think Angel's going to be the one to go out and find him. I think it's going to be, like, season 4 or season 5 thing.
What do you think this symbolizes, Angel taking down Connor's crib? I mean, clearly he's not over it, but he's willing to move on.
I think that means the production team was tired of having a baby on set, and they needed to confirm for even the audience that they're done doing that because they realized what a mistake it was.
Within the concept of the show,
Then, I think the baby's done. We're no longer going to see a baby on the show. He's, like I said, if anything, he's coming back as an adult because they're not going to want to deal with that schedule anymore.
I think this is just Angel doesn't need that reminder. Like, he's got a million thoughts and feelings about Connor and isn't giving up, and it's all inside of him, and seeing the crib is not helping. Like, it's not doing anything. So taking it apart and putting it away is like allowing him to say, he's still, you know, he's still here. He's still a part of me, but until I can get him back, like, I can't stare at this crib anymore.
And it also goes back to that conversation he has with Cordelia when she says, like, you're never going to forget him, but you're going to go on living. Mm-hmm. And he says at that moment, I don't know how. And I think this is him taking those first steps to go on living without Connor.
Yeah, which is really important. All right, let's jump into favorite scenes now. Mine is this really tiny moment where they're at the casino, all of them, and the soul sucker guy asks Angel, like, how stupid do I look? And Angel just smiles a little bit, and he doesn't even have to say anything, but you can just tell what he's thinking. Like, I mean, do you really want me to answer that question? And I don't know. I like whenever Angel smiles, even if it's in context like this. All right, Caitlin, what's your favorite scene?
Mine is every instance of Cordelia just being perfect and knowing exactly what Angel needs and how supportive she is. And I love, like, their moments are just, they're so quiet in this episode.
Yeah.
And it's just, they're so easy with each other. And I just, it's really you can really see how much they matter to each other. Like, they don't need to be big. They're just quiet together. And my honorable mention goes to the scene where Fred comes back and is trying to, like, tell everyone that Gunn's in trouble. And everyone is confused. And she's trying so hard to explain it. And everyone's so confused for different reasons. And it's amazingly hilarious.
Yeah, I loved that one because it makes total sense when you're Fred. And everyone else is like, and actually one of my favorite line goes to that scene, so we'll get back to that soon. But
he's in trouble because he broke up with you. Like, how do we get from A to B here?
You would never do that. And Kristen, what about you?
Mine is the whole scene with Angel not really outsmarting the soul sucker. Like, when he walks in and it's like he's like super confident and double or nothing, like, you'll get my soul too. And I really thought he had a plan. And like, and Cordy, you know, has the stake and is like ready just in case they take his soul and he becomes Angelus. And I'm like, okay, he's got a plan. And then he cuts the deck and he loses. And then she stabs the other guy. He had no plan. Like, he was just kind of going along, and I just thought it was hilarious that, like, he outsmarted him, but he didn't really, because all he did was just kind of go with the flow and, okay, stab him. All right, I'll chop off his head. That fixes the problem. Like, it's just, it was wonderful in all of its ridiculous.
That's such a trope, like, the hero wins the gamble, and yeah. Even Angel himself is surprised that he loses because of that trope. Like, three? What?
Yeah. Especially when the other guy turned over a 9. You're like, that is literally right in the middle. Like, he has a 50-50 chance here, really, of the cards left in the deck. It all comes down to about a 50-50 chance. So, you know, it was perfect.
Then he pulls out a 3. The worst. A 3. What about you, Mitch?
Mine's Gangster's Paradise playing in the background for Gunn's flashback.
Oh my god, why was that there?
That's such a period piece at this point. It's like, yeah, I remember that.
I, like, forgot how much of that song I know by heart. And so I'm, like, singing along, and I'm like, oh my god. Like, it's been so long. Like, that song.
Yeah.
I laughed because I was reading a recap that was like, by the way, this song came out in August 95 and the flashback takes place in spring 95.
I'm fine with that.
That is actually really funny. Yeah, I kind of just rolled my eyes at that, although I do like that song. All right, favorite lines. Mine is during the whole Fred explanation thing, and everyone's like so confused, and Angel's confused and goes, wait a second, let me get this straight. You and Gunn are dating? Like, oops, nobody filled him in on this.
And he's too caught up in his own stuff to notice.
Yes. What about you, Caitlin? What's your favorite line?
Mine is after Gunn goes to kill that demon in that couple's lair, which was also hilarious scene, that the demon couple. But he leaves and Gru goes, he's very fortunate to have such a woman looking after his weapon. And Lorne walks in and goes, I'm not touching that one.
Kristen, your line is one of my favorites as well.
It's so good. Okay, yeah. Mine is this little exchange between Gunn and Fred. And Gunn says, it was a truck. I was 17 years old, and I sold my soul for a truck. And Fred goes, not this truck. And Gunn goes, don't go dissing my girl. And Fred says, oh, Charles, your soul wasn't worth air conditioning?
Seriously, though.
Air conditioning, like, in LA? Are you crazy?
Like, I want the most tricked out truck possible. Like, if I'm selling my soul for it, like, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. 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 All right, Mitch, your favorite line.
Pancake kiss. Because, yes. Oh my god.
They are so don't need to explain that.
Yes, they but like are. Pancake. Come on, guys. We've been calling them the pancakes. Holy, like, how?
It's too cute.
I really loved when Fred was like, pancakes and waffles, I am in carb heaven. I was like, girl, I feel you on a spiritual level right now.
Add some hash browns and we are in business.
I thought she was going to get tacos for breakfast and I was so excited for her.
That would have been great too.
Yeah.
Like a breakfast ham taco with like some scrambled egg in there.
Mm.
Like meat out of a waffle.
I wouldn't eat that, but that's fine. I don't really like waffles. I don't know why.
What?
That's, I don't know. I like pancakes though.
Right.
Okay, as usual, if you guys would like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypeable.com or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We also love iTunes reviews. We especially love 5-star iTunes reviews. It helps other people find our podcast. So if you rate us 5 stars, then I'll give you a pancake kiss.
Pancake kiss.
That was really cute. Like, I didn't read it ahead of time. I just read it as I went, and then it was slightly surprising, but not altogether undesirable.
But not a waffle kiss.
Not a waffle kiss.
This got strange. I'm sorry for that.
No syrup either. Just pancake. It's good to get strange. All right, let's jump into listener feedback now. We've got, let's see, Twitter from Laura Morrow. Caitlin, will you read this one, please?
Sure. Laura Morrow says, so I guess me screaming at my laptop at the end of Angel Epps is becoming a theme in my life. Well, that was an unexpected twist. And I read that and go, which episode? Because that could apply to 3/4 of the episodes.
That's fair. And Kristen, I think you should read this one from Stephanie.
I think I need to. Stephanie Merrill at Smerily says, star nods along with Brittany, I needed more David in my life, so I started watching Bones. 10 days later, and I'm almost done with season 2. That is exactly what happened to me. I was like, I'm not getting enough David in this Buffy Angel watch thing. And I got sucked into Bones, which I'd already kind of wanted to watch. And I love him as Booth. And I know it's like sacrilege, but Booth is like my favorite character of his. So he's so good as Booth. He's just so good. And I love it. And
yes. Whatever.
So,
but he's not Angel. I'm sorry.
Stephanie, I understand. It's genius. Bones is just awesome.
All right. And we have quite a hypeable comment here from Megan. Mitch, will you tackle this for us?
I'll read Megan's quite a hypeable comment. She writes, I had a few thoughts about the discussion of these episodes that I wanted to share. I don't know. This is probably last week. The first thing is about the trio and how they seem so low stakes compared with other season-long villains from Buffy. This is a topic that has been ongoing on the podcast, and I have wanted to write in before, but I kept procrastinating, and now I'm kind of glad I did, because I forgot that this episode actually points out how useless they are. The thing is, I don't think this is just lampshading. I think it is just an indication that their general pointlessness has been intentional on the part of the show. From Buffy's perspective, her friends ripped her out of heaven and sent her into a deep, depressive spiral. And for what? Not because there was some terrible villain to fight and they couldn't do it without her. If the trio are the worst Sunnydale has to offer now, then what was the point? Also, one of the newbies asked why the trio are still a thing since they are so generally incompetent that Buffy could take them out in 2 seconds. I think the answer to this is contained in the question. They seem like such a non-threat, and all of the Scoobies have been struggling much with their personal lives this season that the trio just haven't been very high on their priority list. Moving on to Angel.
Well, I want to pause there for a second because I think that's totally fair. And I think this season more than anything has been about humanity in a lot of ways. And the fact that, yeah, the trio is kind of pointless. And I think their point in the show is that they're pointless. And I think it's that they're human. And I think it's that Buffy is dealing with very human issues. She died, she came back, she's dealing with relationships. Other characters are dealing with relationships with each other. You've got Willow and Tara and Anya and Xander, and Buffy struggling with things like finances and missing the garbage truck and getting her sister to do her own chores. So the idea that they're not facing some big otherworldly demon kind of keeps everything grounded after the fact that Buffy came back from the dead. So while I know that it's kind of frustrating, I do think it's very intentional.
Yeah, I think Karen brings up the best points there that I would have as well. Moving on to Angel. This is the Megan's comment again. Someone mentioned that Wesley's plan to give Connor to Holtz doesn't make sense for his character, and I would agree if I thought that was his plan. In the previous episode, it's a little unclear, but I think Fred and Gunn's investigation in this episode indicates that Wesley meant to run away with Connor himself. Steen's interventions stopped him, parentheses, she's the worst. Fred and Gunn find out that Wesley had packed a bunch of things, and we saw him packing his car at the end of the last episode. We can also see that the park where he saw Justine all beaten up is right across the street from him. So it looks like he just stopped home to get his things and would have left from there, except that Justine tricked him by playing on his sympathies. Yeah, I didn't think he was giving Connor directly to Holtz. I thought he was trying to escape with him, and I never had the inclination of anything else.
Yeah, I agree with that as well.
Yeah.
Great comment. Thank you so much for that, Megan. And we're going to finish off the episode with Mitch's musings, Kristen's contemplations. We've got Buffy 619, Seeing Red, and Angel 319, The Price.
Okay.
Like a bowl or seeing red? Is that what seeing red is, I think, usually? Or just anger? But if a bowl sees red, it goes towards
charges.
So are we going to have some charge? So what I'm going to say is I feel like this could be time for, like, Red Amy to come back and do that thing that she wanted to do that one day. Like, she came by Willow's house, knocked on the door, and was like, hey. And Willow's like, no. And that could be, like, the time, like, witch fight. You know,
I see this going like a much more like almost literal way. I think there's going to be a like an anger demon or something that steps into Sunnydale and like has them all like someone gets doused in whatever, some sort of, you know, whatever, and
anger juice.
Yeah. And can't like get a hold of their anger. And like, it's probably someone like Anya or Xander, or somebody who has some sort of reason to maybe be mad, so they don't necessarily get it at first. And yeah, I have a feeling this is some sort of like demon that makes someone actually like see red, like is really pissed.
Like that's the monster of the week that it turns you angry.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Angel, sir, are you done with Buffy?
Yes. Yeah, we can move on.
Because Angel 319, the price, there's a price for... there was a spell or someone that Angel visited. Oh, it was the Shining girl, Kay Panabaker. She was telling Angel that for visiting her, him and Lila would pay a price, or just himself, for getting information on what was going on with Connor, I believe, or the world or something, whatever they were looking for at that point. So I guess this is the price. Maybe it's like, maybe Connor comes back evil because that was the price Angel paid, and now it's the prophecy will come true or something. I don't know.
I think that there's Wesley's name is Wesley Wyndham Price. So I think that this is going to have something to do with the price that Wesley pays to get back in everybody's good graces. I think it also has the price that someone has to pay to get Connor back. I think it has something to do with like, yeah, they're all, this is the episode where we find out like what has to be done to solve things. Like I don't think they're going to let Wesley stew all by himself forever. I think this episode, we're going to see what has to be done in order to get him back in good graces, or to at least get on that road and start moving that direction.
Those are some very good guesses, actually. Very impressed. As usual, no comment. But thank you, everyone, for listening to us ramble on about these two episodes once again. Hope you enjoy it, and hope you will stick around and hear us out again next week. And until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Mitch, you ruined the hard C sound of our lips.
I'm Karen. I'm Kristen, and I completely lost the doc. And I'm like, am I third? I must be third.
I could have just said plow. Is that worth it?
Oh yeah.
And I'm Kumitch.
Clowmitch. Clowmitch. And I'm out. Clow, Mitch, Clow.
I like that.
Yeah, that's nice. I once went by Double O Clow in college because of reasons, but regardless, it was like my nickname, so that kind of works.
And I just realized too, Clow, Kranz, Kelly, Rot.
Oh, Karen, you were with there.
Yeah.
So you have to be the James Bond in that scenario.